Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
It's kind of interesting that Micheál Martin wants Kneecap to clarify where they stand when another video has just surfaced of them live somewhere in London, where at the end of the gig they shout, "Up Hamas, up Hezbollah." I mean, and they are draped with a Hezbollah flag. Micheál, I don't think you need to ask that question. You can clearly see where they stand. They also say Shukri Alor as well. But they also said, of course, in another gig, which has surfaced yesterday, the only good Tory is a dead Tory, and kill your local MP. Now, look, I'm all for free speech. Absolutely. Say what you want. I couldn't care less. But that's incitement to violence, isn't it? When you incite somebody to kill somebody, that's incitement to violence. And not only that, you have to be responsible. Say it if you want to. Say whatever you want to say. I always say, you know, is free speech limited? Probably not. But you have to take responsibility for what you say. And responsibility has consequences. So there could be consequences to what you say. And I think the consequences for Kneecap in this situation could be quite serious to their careers. Because there's already suggestions, I can see people already online calling in America for their visas to be cancelled because they're going on a US tour. They have 82 dates or something like that, a US tour. So, I mean, you can stand up on a stage and say whatever you want and support whoever you want. But you've got to be aware that there are consequences to everything you say. And if you're willing to back that up, well and good. Fair play to you. But I think most people wouldn't back up statements like that. I mean, I understand people take sides between Israel and Hamas and Palestine. But you, as much as you can't support the Israeli army murdering and slaughtering people, you equally can't support a terrorist organization like Hamas murdering and slaughtering people. Nobody should be murdering and slaughtering anybody. Anyway, it's just an interesting conversation. Now, a bit later on, by the way, on a lighter note, we will be talking about money for a wedding. So somebody received an invitation and they sent it to us, a wedding invitation. And on the wedding invitation, it says, "No presents, just please give us money," with a bank account number. Now, the listener said, "I was probably going to give them money anyway, but now I've decided not to, just to piss them off. Should the cheek of them actually giving us their bank account number?" And I'm thinking, I kind of said it to the girls there, and they're kind of saying, yeah, that kind of happens now and again. That's what people do. And I'm going, do they? I think that's really cheeky. Also, I mean, there's interesting statistics out today in relation to uninsured drivers. At one stage there, about 2 years ago, 1 in 9 drivers were uninsured. But that number is starting to come down now because it's a lot more difficult now to drive without insurance because the Garda Síochána don't actually need to look in your window anymore. Actually, we're getting to a point now where I pretty much say, like Northern Ireland and the UK, we won't have to have, you know, stickers in our windows to say we have tax insurance and an NCT. I was going to say an NHS. An NCT, because the guards can just look at your reg and, you know, put it into their little system and they'll know immediately if you have all those things. But here's the thing. We got an interesting message in from somebody in relation to that story who said his brother's driving with no insurance because he lives in a place where there's no public transport and he has to keep his job to put food on the table. And I don't know if you think that's a fair excuse, because insurance can be expensive. It's actually a rip-off, a complete and utter rip-off. For those who don't have accidents, you know what I mean? There's a gamble in it. But anyway, we'll talk about that later on. But last week, we were talking about something completely different. And I started off the show talking about Donald Trump's statements and comments in relation to the Ukraine-Russia war. And I was saying, I don't know how the conversation came up, but I was saying, you know, I'm not going to run down a beach with a gun in my hand to fight for my country. If Ireland went to war tomorrow and Micheál Martin said, okay, everybody under the age of 70, over the age of 18, here you go, here's a gun for you. You know, an AK-47 or whatever it is they have nowadays. Off you go down to Tallymount Beach there. That's the way they're coming in. It's the Brits or, I don't know, Germany or somebody, I don't know. I'm not going. I'm going and I'm getting me family, my wife, my stepdaughter, and I'm saying, let's go. We're all getting on a plane and we're going somewhere safe. I'm not dying for my country. I didn't spend my whole life on this planet to die half running halfway down the beach. Because I know obviously I'm talking about World War II and the like. You know, people don't run down beaches, generally speaking, anymore. Wars are not really fought on the ground very much. But like you can see in, obviously, Ukraine, they are being fought on the ground. But generally speaking, they're fought through the internet and places like that nowadays, or financially. But what I'm saying is, if it was a situation like Dunkirk, you know, 50% of those people who get off boats and run up the beach, they're going to die. They're cannon fodder. And I was asking, would you die for your country? So, I'm surprised by the amount of people who said they would. You know? And some people called me a coward or a chicken. Boylan, you ran for election and you wouldn't die for your country. Absolutely not. I ran to be a European MEP. That doesn't mean I'm going to give my life up for the country. I'll fight for the country with words, not physically, with words. I'll stand up for the country. I'll demand everything and resources for the country. I'll help people as much as I can. But I'm not going to die for my country. If I want to die, I'll die of natural causes, thankfully. So let me know, would you, here's the question, would you die for your country? I mean, recent figures, I'm looking at this here. Recent figures have shown that the army has dropped below 6,000 people for the first time in living memory. Obviously, less people are willing to die for their country. Currently, there are 1,500 people less than the absolute minimum the force should have, the defence forces. More people are leaving the defence forces than are joining it. Mark Keane is the president of PD4A, which represents more than 6,000 enlisted personnel, said retention in the defence forces has been significant issue in the recent years, with issues such as pay and conditions being frequently cited as for poor recruitment. I don't think that's the only problem. Anyway, all soldiers within the Irish Defence Forces carry out a wide range of duties, including taking part in military exercises and operations, combat skills in the field, peacekeeping in war-torn areas, and delivering humanitarian aid where it's needed. With this in mind, are people still willing to die for their country? Willing to fight on the front lines for it? I don't know. Let me know what you think. Would you die for your country? The number is 087-188-0008. Let's take a little vote on it. Just text her or WhatsApp the words yes or no. Would you die for your country? Morris.
Good evening.
Yeah. I have a feeling you don't even have to answer me, Morris. You'd be out there on the beaches with a gun in your hand, yeah, running up and down. Yeah.
And a knife.
And a knife.
And a bayonet. Listen, I just have two things to say to you before we go on to the discussion about defending your country or whatever. That quote, "the only good Tory is a dead Tory," that's a quote from an Irish guy who was in Custer's army.
It doesn't matter who it was from.
No, I'm just telling you, this is where it came from. His name was General Philip Sheridan, whose family emigrated from Cavan, and he became the equivalent of Napoleon in the American army, like the cavalry, right? Mm. And you know what he's only remembered for? The only good Indian is a dead Indian.
That's so right. I do remember. Yeah. From. Yeah, probably.
Exactly. So that was only a quip. They're making doesn't matter. Of it.
Yeah, like, but you can't say kill your local. Hang on, Morris. You can't say kill your local MP, and the British take that very seriously. There were two MPs killed, slaughtered in broad day. No, hold on. There were two MPs.
Tongue in cheek.
Nothing tongue in cheek about saying something like that. Two MPs died in the UK because of things like that.
Those three youngsters that are in that group lived under fucking English rule all their lives.
I don't care. Hang on. They're in a very privileged position now where they have a decent platform. Yes, use that platform if you want to.
And they don't want the world responsible. To forget what was done to the people.
Yeah, but be responsible. There's ways of doing it without saying stuff like that.
Yeah, I think they're making a Melbourne Old Hill. They're a good band. Everybody likes them.
I don't like them. I think they're crap.
Slagged them off.
I'm not going to slag them off. I just think they're crap. I wouldn't listen to them.
You know, but anyway, the other thing is, remember you were talking about the wedding gifts, yeah?
Yeah. James Morris, you're covering all topics here, aren't you?
Yeah, it's just imagine, I'm going to a wedding in Birmingham on the 12th of June, and it's my sister's grandson, so I'm a great uncle to him. So he's getting married, right? So here's the gifts. The most important gift to us is having you here to share our special day.
Oh, that's nice.
But if you wish to contribute in some other way, we'd love a few pennies for our pos for our honeymoon trip after we tie the knot.
And here's a bank account number.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Morris, get back to dying for your country, because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So would you die for your country?
I would, yeah, 100%. Look, I said to you, a researcher, when I rang in, I was trained to kill and I was, you know, I'm willing to die when I was in the army. I took up a gun, I took an allegiance to this country, and I will defend this country with my last breath.
I've no problem with you defending your country, that's fine, but would you die for your country? Would you walk into a situation where you know you have a 50-50 chance of not coming home?
If I can secure this country for the future generations to come after what the people did in 1916, I'd gladly do it in their shadow. I'd gladly save this country from any tyrant or anybody that tried to invade us. And if you press the button and bomb the fuck out of us, at least I know I went down dying fighting. I'd rather live on me feet than survive on me knees. Die on me feet, live on me knees. You know, that sort of way.
Does that sound like madness? I mean, you have your own family. You have your daughters. your grandchildren to live for. They might be proud of you, but they might think, Jesus, Morris is an awful stupid fool running out there with guaranteed death.
They'll turn around and say, well, you know what? My granddad or my dad or my uncle gave his life for his country. At least he didn't run away and be a yellow belly.
But I'm not saying I'd run away. I just wouldn't go in the first place.
I know, but see, I have it in my family from years now. I come from a military family.
I was in the FCA. I was in the FCA too. I enjoyed shooting, actually. It was good fun. But I was in the FCA, but I wouldn't die for my country.
I was in the Army as well. And one of the jobs I did when I was in there, I was a driver, and I was a bomb disposal driver. And it was the best job I ever had. But the Army wasn't for me, and I left in 82 after 3 years.
Hmm.
You know, I'm retiring next year now. And if the war did come up, or something happened in this country, of course I'd pick up a weapon. I'd pick up anything to defend this country, this land, this soil. It's
okay, let's just say Germany invaded Ireland tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now we're doomed if Germany invades us, right? So if Germany
invades us,
let's just go old school here, right? Planes and beaches, right? And Micheál Martin says, all right, everybody, quick, into Dublin Castle. We have thousands and thousands of guns. Everybody get down to Dollymount Beach and Howth and defend your country. Or alternatively, here's a plane ticket. You can go to Australia with your family.
I'd stay and fight for the land. I wouldn't run away.
You're on your own.
Do you know what? I couldn't live in Australia.
I'm off to Sydney.
Because I die of a guilty conscience, knowing that I walked out of my country. That's as bad as Roy Keane walking out on Ireland in 2000.
Oh, stop.
There you go. That's what it is to betray your country. But one thing I'd say to you, about everybody like looking at it like a simple, line up on the beach and you'd be cannon fodder. This country, we're the greatest people in the world for guerrilla warfare because of the landscape that we live in. And every time a column of the IRA attacked the Black and Tans and the Brits when they were here, they slaughtered them and they went missing.
But that's that whole argument about the IRA, were they terrorists or freedom fighters?
Anybody that stands up to an occupier or a colonial man,
I have no problem with that.
A hero in my eyes.
I've no problem with people standing up to an occupier. But planting bombs where innocent civilians get killed is not being.
You take the war.
Is not guerrilla warfare. That's terrorism.
Going to be collateral damage.
Not intentional collateral damage. You don't plant a bomb in the middle of a city where there's people, innocent people walking around.
Yeah.
Or a hotel. Remember the hotel in Brighton, of course, where innocent people were working. Yes, there was politicians there. I know that, Maggie Scratcher and the rest of them. But that's not the point. There were innocent people there working too, who died.
And listen, when England was at war with Germany and Dublin got fucking bombed by
the
state,
that was a mistake.
Did the English do anything or say anything?
Yeah, no, that was a mistake.
Still people died. There's always
people died, but it wasn't intentional.
It doesn't matter. They still died.
What happened that night? It was foggy, wasn't it, or something like that?
No, they just got lost between Liverpool and Ireland and Belfast, and they bombed Belfast. Would you believe a 500-pound bomb fell into Phoenix Park?
I know, they bombed Belfast, North Strand, Phoenix Park. Where else did they bomb?
I think there might have been something down around Wexford or Waterford got hit as well, or Bray around Wicklow.
Mm.
But anyway, listen, there's always going to be collateral damage in war situations.
Yeah, but collateral damage I get, and that's a problem obviously in war, and it's a fact of war, but intentional collateral damage, you know what I mean?
It depends on what people are going through at the time, you know what I mean?
War, okay, I don't support the IRA, you know, never did. Well, and I think most, if I asked that question on air tonight, I did a poll, how many people support the IRA? I think less people would support them than you think, Morris.
The IRA were only founded because of what the British Army were doing.
I'm not saying, I agree with you. I'm not saying that.
You know, if you lived up there, you wouldn't be here. You'd be fucking dead. You'd be fucking collateral damage. They'd take you out in a heartbeat. Or we look as if you was carrying a gun. And you were assaulted by a policeman up there, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. But that guy could have pulled that trigger and ended your life and say, I thought he was a terrorist. He was in a car and had false plates on it. I felt threatened. You'd be fucking dead.
Stay there for a second, Morris. Stay with me, because I want to go to Daniel. Daniel, getting back to the topic at hand, would you? Morris said he'd die for his country. He'd run up the beach. Would you?
No, not a hope.
No.
No way.
Okay, why not? No. What about people say, you're nothing but a coward?
Well, I might be a coward, but I'd be a breathing, living coward, wouldn't I?
I'd be a living coward.
It makes no odds to me. I mean, it's... If this country was taken, I mean, I love my country, but if it was taken over tomorrow or occupied, or, you know, I'm not looking to defend it or defend its honour or, you know, no, I'd be gone. For what? What would I stay for? To save what? To save a country that's going backwards, that has no forward thinking at all? Nah, see you later.
Well, I don't think of it like that now, in fairness. I just but I mean, self-preservation, isn't it? It's a bit self-preservation, and your family, protecting your family. My family come before the country.
Yeah, yeah, and look, I mean, if Ireland was a texture, you know, I don't think we'd have much of a chance, would we?
No, no. Come on, let's be clear. We've 6,000 people in the army. You know, what I mean?
Yeah, no. I'd be gone. I admire your other callers, Will, but no, not a hope. I wouldn't be hanging around.
Yeah, so you'd be on the first flight with your family out of the place if you could.
Gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
See, Morris?
Yeah, Ireland means nothing to some people. It means something to me. That's the way it is.
Yeah, I'm looking at our poll here, and I asked people to take text yes or no as to whether they'd fight for the country or die for their country. And I'm looking here, so far we're at 67% are saying no. 67%, Morris. That's nearly 7%, 70% of the population saying no. They wouldn't die for the country.
So what is Ireland now, a nation of chickens?
No. It's self-preservation, isn't it?
Says the guy who left the army after
no
4 years.
No greater sacrifice than lay down your life. For your fellow man or your country.
Do you hear what Daniel just said, by the way? Says the guy who left the army after 3 years.
Oh, yeah, because it wasn't for me. But at least I stood up and I took a note to serve this country. You know, and I have military. My father served for 24 years, a brother 9 and a brother 12. So I come from a military family, and I know what it is to lay down my life for my country. And I had family that was in the IRA, and I had family that was in the Connacht Rangers. So don't talk to me about being proud of who I am or what I stand for.
I left say you love Michael Collins.
It was in my blood.
Do you know the way at Christmas time when people sit around the fire and watch Home Alone? I'd say you get a bucket of popcorn and watch Michael Collins.
It's a good movie, in fairness.
Michael Collins, yeah. But at least he stood up for his country and he paid for it with his life. He'd probably be shocked that there's plenty more chickens, 67% of chickens in the country now. What did he die for? Ireland is a nation of chickens now. Oh, come on in and take us over. We're submissive. We're okay. Do what you want to us.
Yeah, but as I said, and I've had the privilege of being on this show many times, and as I always say, if you cut anybody, doesn't matter if you're Irish, if you're Iraqi, if you're Algerian, whatever, if you cut us, we all bleed the same colour. So I think the days of, I mean, listen, be honest with yourself. When was the last time Ireland was Ireland? Maybe the early to mid 1990s. We are effectively nothing more than a glorified city in Europe. We all know it. So this whole thing of like, I defend my country. No, you wouldn't. You'd defend some old hanging on idea of what your vision of a country used to be. It's well gone. We all know it. And for that reason, I'd be gone. If I thought there was something worth staying and fighting for, listen, I'd be the first one to stay and fight.
I'm talking about the soil of Ireland. I'm talking about the soil of Ireland. I'd die for this land.
The soil.
That's what I'd die for, because it's Irish. The soil. Yeah, it's the beaten heart of this country.
Is that all we've left? It's just the soil,
and
the mountains, the trees.
Occupy us. Yeah, we've fought for survival all our lives, and we'll never submit to anybody. So if you can live with yourself by walking away and denying your country and your people its freedom, you go ahead and live your guilty life somewhere else.
I wouldn't feel guilty, by the way, can I just say? I wouldn't live a guilty life.
It's up to you.
Yeah, I'd think of you when I'm sitting on a beach in Bondi or somewhere. You know, I'd say, God bless poor Morris.
Well, that's Australia is a colonial fucking prison.
No, I'm just saying, I'm using it as an example. I probably wouldn't go to Australia.
Yeah.
But just because I mentioned earlier on.
You're a bit of a Trump fan. I think Trump would bring you over to the White House.
Yeah, I'd hang out and live in Mar-a-Lago somewhere, down beside Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
Oh, stay there for a second, Daniel, if you can. Morris, I know you have to go. Thank you for joining us. Daniel, stay there. I want to go to Peter Dooley in a second, but I've got to take a quick break first. And the question quite simply is, hypothetically, because we don't really fight wars like that, although the Ukraine war, Russia war has been fought on the ground, you know, would you fight for your country? Would you take up arms, run down to the beach? You remember those scenes from Dunkirk and all those World War kind of scenes that we see on television? And you see the lads coming in those amphibious vehicles at the beaches and the ramp goes down and they all run. And they have a 50-50 chance of making it from one end of the beach to the other. Would you like to be one of the, would you do that for your country? You know, if it was the Germans or the French or the Spanish, it's a theoretical war. Would you fight for your country? Daniel says no, because there's nothing left worth fighting for. He said, we're just a city in Europe now. We've been colonized anyway. What's the big deal? Whereas Morris says he'd fight for the soil. Keep texting, keep WhatsApping. The number's 087-188-0008. Now, let me go to Peter Dooley. Peter, hi, how are you?
How are you, Noel? How are you keeping?
Now, I'm trying to guess what everybody will say here, knowing all my regular callers. And initially, the old Peter Dooley from maybe 5 years ago, I think would have fought for his country. But I think this Peter Dooley now, I think has maybe opened his eyes to something that maybe Daniel said there as well, which is Ireland is not Ireland, it's just a city in Europe now.
What do you mean, the old Peter Dooley? I'm the same Peter Dooley.
So, Peter, would you fight for your country? Would you die for your country?
Well, I'd put it like this. The Ireland of today, it's going down the road of being just a branch of the European Union at the behest of Martin Harris and the Lowry-led independence, and most certainly would not go an inch near any of them. I'd rather they send themselves off to fight a war on behalf of the people of Ireland. No problem. I think they should all send it. And actually, by the way, they should send people like Brendan McDonagh and these people off, the head of NAMA, who's getting a job as a new housing czar. They should send all these people
why,
off.
By the way, here's the thing. Can I just say something? Why do we need a housing czar when we have a minister for housing? Is he incapable of doing his job or something?
Technocrats are taking over as well. Money making racket. That's all it's about. Money making racket. And a guy who actually sold out the country with NAMA and the Vulture Funds as well.
I'm going to get on to my boss tomorrow and see can we get a talk show supervisor. A talk show host supervisor. Yeah. Just to supervise me. Anyway, so.
Can I play for that job now?
So, Peter, getting back to would you die for your country? Yeah. So you're saying no, not now you wouldn't, because you don't...
Well, absolutely. I think the way the Irish government have just become... Like, Micheál Martin is essentially nothing but a branch manager for Europe. That's what Ireland has become. Ireland has lost any notion of sovereignty, independence...
Well, Micheál doesn't seem to have a huge respect for sovereignty, and he said that in the past. It was an outdated concept or something along those lines. Yeah.
He said it was a backwards-looking idea. But yet, yesterday he went over to Arbor Hill as a hypocrite. To lay a wreath at the graves where the men of 1916, a lot of the signatories of the proclamation and others were brutally executed by the British establishment in Kilmainham Jail and thrown into a quarry pit at the back of Arbor Hill Prison. And he went over to commemorate the ones who died. And this is a man who said sovereignty was a backward-looking idea. He's betrayed the memories of those men who have fought for our republic. Mm.
But I want to know, would you betray the memories of those men by not fighting for your country?
Absolutely not.
Well, then you're going to die for your country, so are you?
Well, the point I was come to, I would do whatever it takes for Ireland, for the working class and ordinary people of Ireland, to ensure we have our sovereignty, we have our independence, and that the principles of the Constitution, where the people, the policy of the state derives from the people, not from anybody else, not from Europe, not from Washington, D.C., not from any other institution outside the people of Ireland. That's fundamentally vitally important now more than ever. And that's in Ireland that it would struggle as hard as they can to achieve. And I think that...
You're not answering my question.
Well, absolutely.
I'm asking you hypothetically now. I know it's not going to happen, but because who could be bothered invading us? But if Germany... Spain or France.
We've been invaded already. But well, I know. Yeah, okay. European Union. That's been honest with you.
Okay, that's a different type of invasion. All right, but what I'm going to say, but if we were invaded, you know, if there was a military exercise and we were invaded tomorrow by Germany or France or Spain or some other European country, would you go down to the beach with a gun in your hand?
Well, I'd put it this way, I wouldn't lay down my life and fight against another working class person, working against the interests of working class people. Yes, as I said to you.
Is that a no?
No. Do you know what I'll tell you? I'll tell you. No, I'll put it like this.
Jesus Christ.
I'll tell you the truth. And this is important for people to listen to.
Okay.
Because, it's the people who create the wars and start the wars who go off and fight the wars. So why don't we send Martin and all his ilk off and he's talking about fighting Putin? That guy couldn't fight his way out of a paper bag. To be honest with you, Micheál Martin has no authority govern essentially in Ireland, because you know what, he's no interest in Irish sovereignty. And yesterday, as I said, he betrayed.
I know. You told me that. Okay. But hang on, Daniel. Do you understand what Peter's saying? He's not really answering the question, mind you. But do you understand what he's saying, Daniel?
Yeah, but again, listen, it's the same old boring rhetoric, like, the, you know, working class people, blah blah blah. Like, I don't understand what any of this has to do with working class people. Like, I don't get.
I understand. You know that old scene where, you know, the British and the German soldier meet on the front lines and they look at each other, exchange a cigarette, and then they have to decide who's going to kill who. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're both working class 19-year-olds, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, no, I understand the points being made, but I think they're naive and incorrect.
Hang on. You know what? Working class people are the ones that set the front lines to die. That's they're the cannon.
They're the cannon fodder.
Look at the Irish that were sent over to the Somme in the First World War. Look at, because they were in poverty in Ireland. Look at all the Ukrainians getting killed today. Look at all the people around the world getting killed in wars. It's not Zelensky getting killed. It's not Macron. Who is it? Like, what people need to wise up to what we're fighting for. Like, wars fundamentally never serve the interests of ordinary people and working class people. I don't mind you.
I mean, I don't know whether you've seen, by the way, I don't know whether you've seen the videos going around online in Ukraine of, men who were of war, fighting age, literally being picked up off the streets and thrown into the back of vans to fight for their country.
But that's why, to my point, when your
colleague very kindly rang me, that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't stay and fight, because with the greatest respect, maybe working class people are maybe the kind of people who, you know, wait for someone else to do it, and then when they do it in a way that doesn't suit them, they just complain. Whereas me, I do it for myself. I'd be gone. I'm not worried about being a working class anything. I'm not looking to be bloody any hero or any sort of person. You know, I'm just, you know, working class people. It's just a throwaway comment. What are working class people? Like,
you know,
these are the same people who will complain about the government and all this, and yet they'll take the dole. And they're also the same kind of people who complain about all these big monopoly companies who aren't caring about the working man, but yet they'll type all this on Twitter on a 600 euro iPhone. And, you know, give me a break. It's waffle. It's crap. It's nothing more than misguided anger, folded up. People can't look at themselves in the mirror and face their own problems, and they just decide to blame government and all this crap. Same old. It is.
Okay, Daniel is typical
of the middle class elitists in Ireland that look down their nose at ordinary people and the struggles that ordinary people have.
But you don't know what class Daniel is.
I look down my nose at the lazy bums. That's what I look down at.
Like you, like Micheál Martin, is it? Brenda McDonagh, 450,000 a year, getting a job now as a housing fair. They the lazy bums, are they? The vulture fund.
Peter, let's be, well, hang on, Daniel. Like, you don't have to answer that. Daniel, Peter, with the greatest respect, if somebody said to me tomorrow, I'm going to give you a job as a radio czar, and I'm going to pay you 450,000, I'd say, happy days. I'm not going to turn it down. So you don't blame him for taking the job. Don't blame him for taking the job. Blame whoever it was idea to create the job.
Ireland's full of corrupt yes men. Yes men that won't do this.
Yeah, but blame the people who create the job, not the people who take them.
The people who create the wealth are the workers. It's not the employers. Without workers, where would you be? What happened during lockdowns? Who was the people who were the essential workers? It was the people collecting the bins, collecting the rubbish.
Oh, delivery men. Yeah, I know.
It wasn't the people sitting at home on their laptops when they were actually pulling down their salaries and wondering whether they're going to get their next latte or delivery. That wasn't the people who were better off. It was the people who went out and did a graft and got up early in the morning, not like Bradcar. So like Bradcar swanning off now in a job at a public relations company. Don't buy this spin. This nonsense is full. Ireland's okay.
Get it. See, you still, you're on now I'm surprised at you, Peter. You're on now about 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. And you still haven't answered the question.
I most certainly would. I'd die for a republic or
okay.
The people.
There we go. All right. Okay. Got that out of you. Stay there for a second. Let me go to Shane. Shane, hi. How are you doing?
Hey, I'd put the lipstick on and I'd get the skirt on and I'd be gone the opposite way. That's got to be me.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Women and children. You can go. Yeah.
No, I tell you, I've had time to think of it there when your assistant there rang me. And you know what? It all depends on what context. So context day meaning, you know, the way the Americans went over to Vietnam or peacekeeping troops and all. No, not a hope in hell. I wouldn't be putting my life in danger for that. But let's go back to very basics. If you had a house full of kids or whatever and people broke in to invade your home.
Oh, that's different. Yeah, of course.
No. Bear with me. You would defend yourself to the death to defend your family.
Yes.
If your country, let's scale that up to a country. If you were being invaded by another country, and the outcome was going to be detrimental to the nation. In other words, when this country invaded us and takes us over, they're going to ethnic cleanse the country. Yes, I did give
a hypothetical question was, yeah. You know, Micheál Martin says, right, the guns are in Dublin Castle. Everybody go get a gun and run down to, you know, Tallyman Beach and stop the invasion. Or here's a plane ticket to Australia or America or something like that. Which
well, you know, like,
for you and your family.
Yeah, but look, the day of putting a gun in your hand now is over. Like,
I know, I know that. Well, not necessarily. I mean, look at Ukraine and Russia. So not necessarily. There is still wars fall to the ground. So here's the, you have a choice. You can stay on Dolyman Beach with an AK-47 in your hand and fight for your country, or whatever guns they use nowadays. Or you can take a plane ticket for you and your family and a few bucks spending money and go to America and set up a new life. What are you doing?
I'd get out. Okay. Nothing worth dying for. No, absolutely not. Look, the most important thing on earth is life. And
yeah,
no matter what
preservation, self-preservation.
Self-preservation, number one. And people will say this and say this and say whatever. When the shit hits the fan, like, people say, oh, this is what I do. They can't say that because when it's facing them, it's a completely different scenario. And if you talk to most soldiers who have been in combat, they come back and ask them one question, was it worth it? And do you know what the answer they'll give you?
No.
No.
I mean, look at the people who come back from Vietnam, for God's sake. They're messed up for life.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter what battle. Like, I mean, if you were to go down the road now another year from this Ukrainian war or 2 years, whenever it gets over, it will be over. Of course, all wars come to an end. And you ask the families and soldiers who've come back with brain damage, meaning mental damage, and ask their family, was it worth it? And I can guarantee you that I'll say no. And what Peter's saying there it is, he's 100% right in what he's saying. Cannon fodder, it's always the poor end up with the shitty end of the stick.
Oh, yeah.
And the big lads sit there issuing the orders. They won't go off. They won't put the old rifle in their hand.
No.
Is it Russia? Putin is taking lads out of prison to send them into their death.
All I ever see Zelensky doing is traveling the world and being on the front of Time magazine and getting into photo shoots and meeting people. I don't see him on the front line.
Yeah, well, he's taking them out of prison and paying their families the equivalent of €40,000 to the family. Now, that's life-changing money to a poor Russian family. That's life-changing. So he's sending them off to their deaths. Cannon fodder for the war.
I didn't know that, actually, did you?
Yeah. So he's taking them out of prison. These are criminals. I don't know what crime they've committed. Some of them have committed murder. And he's given them a reprieve. He's paying their families, wife and kids, a one-off payment, and off they go to the front line. You don't see them again. But look, that's the price of war. But the answer to your question, Niall, is yeah, I would, depending on what context. But I would do me damnedest to run the other way. And I'd be the sort now, stick the lipstick on and the skirt on and off we go. Because nothing's worth fighting. Like, all wars end badly, no matter what.
No, they do. Yeah, of course they do.
They don't end up with, there's no winners in war.
No, there's no fun either in a war. People die. On both sides. By the way, there's no winners. Yeah. You're right. On both sides, people die. And generally, a war is only won, generally speaking, with talks, peace talks. Yeah. It's the only way a war will end, probably, most likely. Generally speaking, there's nobody really is victorious. Peter, are you listening to what Shane is saying? Context.
Yeah.
Save your family. You know, take the plane ticket to Florida.
Listen, you know, I don't know. I think Micheál Martin has been on plenty of planes around the world at our expense. So I suppose maybe he should go to the front. As I said to you, send them off to the front line first.
I guarantee you, none of those people in power that you refer to tonight, they wouldn't be on the front lines.
No, well, absolutely. And
you and Shane will.
What Shane made, 100%. Like, now they're trying to push this rearm in Europe plan. I suppose you've seen this, the €800 billion plan.
Mm-hmm.
To rearm Europe, like to reindustrialize Europe and boost the profits in the military industrial complex. I don't know if you saw the last few days, Ireland did a deal with the United States where the Secretary of the State Department, they signed over €44 billion in for Javelin missiles and for, it should have been Javelins really, but Javelin missiles. These missiles, they could deal with them for the Olympics, probably. They don't get any, the sports lads don't get enough funding. But on a serious note, the for these missiles, and anti-missile launchers as well. And the state is reporting, the State Department now is reporting to Congress to ensure that this is compliant with United States security and defense. So, like, it's basically, they're only copper-fastening this to ensure that it's about protecting the United States. It's not about Ireland.
But it's also financial as well. General Electric's made quite a substantial amount of money out of all this.
Yeah, the point I was coming to is the point that the companies behind these corporations, like there's a company called Raytheon, you've probably heard of all these companies, Lockheed as well.
Yeah.
But like 10% of these companies, 12% of these companies are owned by companies, for instance,
BlackRock.
But BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, massive investors making huge money from war. making huge money from the military industrial complex.
And by the way, not only making money, you take Ukraine, for example. They won't only make money from the war, which they are making money from weapons and everything else, the war. When the war ends, they'll make money again when they have to rebuild Ukraine and parts of Ukraine that have been destroyed. They'll be involved in that too, and they'll make money out of that as well.
But they've already signed over a deal. Like Larry Fink was over already signing over a deal in terms of the reconstruction of Ukraine. And of course, who's going to benefit from that as well?
It's those same companies. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll stay there for a second and let me just go to Sean before the break of my time. Yeah, Sean, hi, how are you?
Good, how are things?
Good. Sean, you would die for your country.
Yeah, I would, yeah. I would, but would I die for the government that we have in place? But I wouldn't.
I wouldn't get an injured finger for the government we have in place.
No, but would I die for Ireland? 100% I would, yeah. I would. I think people, like, I agree with Morris, that Morris was on force, like, you know. My father's from Ireland. He's from Limerick. My nana, she only passed there last month.
Sorry to hear that.
She died of 102, and
well, 102. Well done to her.
And she lived through the tough times in Ireland, yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you asked her the question, she would certainly say yes as well, you know.
No, she was there for World War One and World War Two.
Yeah, I think Ireland, like, I think the way the island is gone now these days, you know, I think it, like, the country is gone the way it is because people are saying they wouldn't fight for the country, you know.
Mm.
I'm 100% with Morris on that. I would.
But you know, hear what Daniel said earlier on. He doesn't believe you're really fighting for Ireland anymore. You're just fighting for another city in Europe, and that's all it is.
I do agree with him. I do agree with that. But the problem is, like I said, because you're saying that 70% of people are saying they wouldn't fight for Ireland, that is the reason Ireland is now just a city in Europe and not Ireland no more. It's because we left it go. You know, like, we have a government in place that can't. That if you go back, if Britain decided to invade Ireland again today, this day, our government would hand the country over. And it's as simple as that. They wouldn't hold up the fight. The Micheál Martin wouldn't tell us to go.
They do a deal. Yeah, they do a deal.
They'll do a deal and they'll hand the whole lot over. I don't know how much
they'd hand over, but there'll be a deal done. Yeah.
No, they won't.
But by the way, I don't like I don't like to see war either. So anything to avoid war, but it has to be reasonable, you know?
I don't want to see war. Jesus, no, I don't think anyone wants to see it. But you have to, like, Ireland is Ireland for what war happened to this country, you know? Like, this country has been fighting, but.
But it's not the same Ireland anymore, really, is it?
No, it's not.
We're part of Europe now. We're just, I think, you know, and I know people complain that we're losing our identity. I don't think we're losing it. I think we've lost it. I think it's not the same.
We lost it because people are scared to say how they feel. People can't say,
we have lost it, not for some of the obvious reasons, but we've also lost it because time moves on and we, as a society, we just evolve. And because of media and the fact that we watch American television and we watch British television and we're so close to each other now, we FaceTime and all those things, we've just become a global village and everybody is pretty much the same. The people in Ireland are pretty much the same as the people in France, the people in Spain and Germany, apart from language maybe. We're pretty much the same culturally as every other city in Europe. So that's the reason why our identity is gone, because of globalization.
I agree with some things you're saying. I wouldn't agree. Like, you know, you can still go parts of Ireland. Like, you know.
I know. Yeah.
You know, it's still Irish. Like, you know, you can go to Connemara, you can knock on a fella's door, and he wouldn't speak to you in English. You know.
Yeah, and I'm assuming it's the same in Germany, France, and Spain, and everywhere else. There are parts of those countries that are quite traditional. In Germany, for example, the south of Germany, Bavaria, as they like to call it. Ruppolding is a beautiful little place. I was there. And people walk around dressed in Lederhosen and they're culturally German. They speak a slightly different dialect of German. And, you know, they would be very traditional. And the same would go for, you know, Spain and France. They would have small quarters where people are quite traditional and cultural. And the same goes for Ireland, right? In Connemara and places like that, you'd still have the Gaeltacht areas, which are very Irish. But generally speaking, we're not. You know what I mean?
I know, but I can't get my head around it, because it's a question. I own a business in Limerick, and it's a question that I would ask customers and stuff like that. It's actually a question I ask, and my answer's always been the same. If there was a war here, would I try and save the country for my kids 100%? 100%. And I'm not saying I'm brave. I'm not going to say I'm a big brave man that would go run to war, because I wouldn't. But if it came on the doorstep, then I would step out. Like,
okay, well, do me a favor, stay there for a second. And Shane and Peter, I'm going to come to Oisín after the break as well. The number is 087-188-0008. The question I'm asking tonight is, would you fight for your country? Would you die? Well, not just fight. Would you die for your country? And everybody tonight is kind of saying something similar, which is they would die for the Ireland that we remember, but maybe not the Ireland that we have today, because there's not much to die for anymore. Because they believe, a lot of people believe, we're losing or lost our identity. I want to know what you think. The number is, as usual, 087-188-0008. Hey, lads, stay with me there for a second. Let me go to Oisín. Oisín, hi, how are you?
Hey, no, listen, no war ends in any good way, shape, or form.
No.
Not one.
No.
Not one. You got one of the previous callers there, World War One on the trenches. I think it was near Flanders, give or take. And there was an armistice to a certain extent, or a ceasefire. So the Germans and the Brits all got up out of the trenches and they began football. And then the following day, they all went back to killing each other.
Yeah, I know.
That's the truth. I've studied history for years. There's no victors to a certain extent in war. Would I stand up? Would I die for my country? I wouldn't take it that far. Would I fight my country? Yes.
That's not the question I'm asking, Sniper. So, would you die for your country? Die meaning, would you run into a situation with a gun in your hand where you have a 50-50 chance of not coming back?
I think that's the chance you have to take.
Ah, so you would?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I would.
Right. I could just see you 100%. Now, Oisín, running down Dollyman Beach with your AK-47 in your hand.
Unless he can supply me with one. I mean, well, in fairness, though, you know, on that score, I think we're all screwed, because we don't have enough weapons or ammo to cover any of us.
Yeah, it's hypothetical. There you go, Peter. Oisín had run down the beach with his gun in his hand.
I'm not gonna say I'm gonna run down screaming, go for the God of Ireland, you know. But I mean,
like a scene from Braveheart or something. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, you know, me arse hanging out. No. Yeah. What I mean is, you know, look, go back to World War One, World War Two. People stood up and they were counted, and rightly or wrongly, they fought for something they believed in.
Yeah, but what a waste of life.
No, look, unfortunately, you see, look, no, that's what war is. It's an unfortunate waste of life. And the worst part is, at the end of it, the parties all sit down and go, at some stage, what the hell was this about? And why did I get this far? Like, eventually, Russia's going to have to, they want Crimea back. And they want parts of Ukraine. Now, I understand your point about Zelensky. He's not kind of sitting out there in the front line firing his AK-47 or anything else of that nature.
But Peter made a good point. Peter made a good point about the people who generally die. World War II, for example, between 70 and 80 million people died in World War II. I mean, generally speaking, they weren't politicians and their wives. You know what I mean?
No, they were not. No. Yeah, this is it.
They were you, they were me, and they were Peter. Yeah, sorry, Peter.
Unfortunately,
go ahead, Peter.
What Oisín was saying there, and it was propaganda has a big weight in this now. Like, you know, if you go back to even the First World War, there was a man by the name of John Redmond who was the head of he was pushing for home rule through parliamentary means. And it was the Irish Volunteers that were set up to fight essentially for Ireland. And he split the volunteers by saying they should fight for Britain in the First World War. And he had a big meeting in Woodenbridge in County Wicklow. And he split the Irish volunteers, and a lot went over to fight in the First World War, died for Britain, essentially. And he said it was about values and freedom and all this type of stuff. And now the same stuff, that was pushed out down the throats of ordinary people. And people that were in poverty, they deliberately targeted.
Yeah, well, two of my uncles fought in World War II for Britain.
Yeah, well,
for money. They did it for financial reasons.
But that's exactly it. And if you look at it now, they're doing exactly the same stuff with the propaganda. Now, Micheál Martin keeps saying we have to fight for the single market. If you ever understand, I never had to die for something like the single market. I understand dying for our values.
No, that's not going to happen.
I know. I don't think we're going to be dying for the single market.
But that's what the single market and their values are worth defending. Mm. So if you read this back, this is really about, what this essentially is about, is again the same sort of propaganda that's been rammed down people's throats. You look at RTE any night of the week, and it's the same.
I don't. I've stopped looking at RTE. I've stopped.
But that's the thing. Yeah, that goes out to more and more people. People have to make up their own minds. And Oisin's 100% right. Wars never, ever, ever serve the interests of working class people.
I see RTE have set up a new department, by the way, out of the three or four people, some misinformation department. I said, maybe you should look at yourselves, lads.
Absolutely. But the big issue with this, Noel, is that we have a long, proud history of standing up for Irish neutrality. Like, we're a country that never colonised anybody. We were colonised and occupied for over 800 years. We're still being colonised as well by the European Union in economic terms. A different way of doing it. But what's important around this, I think fundamentally, is that people need to wise up and stand up for what Ireland we want. The proclamation was read over 109 years ago, this weekend essentially. And it basically said that we declared the right of the people to the ownership of Ireland. And at the weekend, there was a massive demonstration in the city. And the vast, overwhelming majority were strong, ordinary people with decent values.
How many people were at the protest? I've mixed reports, and I've seen some of the photographs, but I'm brutal at guessing how many people are in a crowd. But O'Connell Street seemed to be full from one end to the other. So how many people?
It looked like it.
Yeah.
About 50,000, I would have imagined. I think there was a huge amount. It was one of the biggest marches I think I ever saw. And in fairness, compared to the counter rally that was there, it's worth it.
The counter rally was only about 1,600, 2,000. I don't know.
Ireland,
There's decent people on both sides of the essentially. But the problem is that there's a leadership element. I think my view of it is there's a middle class elitism leadership element in the left in Ireland that has no interest in working class issues. They only have interest in identity politics, woke politics, the culture wars.
Yeah, but you could see that with the counter protest the other day. There was trans flags, Palestinian flags. So they were all other issues. They weren't the issues that the protest was actually about.
You were talking about globalization there now. Mass immigration is the agenda of globalization. Mm. Essentially, it's a race to the bottom. And you're quite right about their identity.
Okay, some people have told me there was 20,000. Somebody else said there was 50,000. There was one guy, seemingly, who calculates these things, said there was 100,000. So it's kind of hard to know. I'm brutal at figures, so I couldn't tell you how many people were there. But let me go back to Sean. Yeah, sorry, Sean.
Yeah, you're on about the protest Saturday.
Yeah.
I believe there was over 60,000 people there. The reason I believe it is because the propaganda don't want you to believe that there was more than 30,000 people up there, because that's what they don't want for the country. They don't want the Irish to stand up for Ireland, And I believe that I don't listen to the news. I don't read the newspapers because they tell you everything that they want you to believe in. Mm. And I believe that Saturday afternoon there was definitely over 60,000 people there easily.
Mm. As I said, I don't know the exact figures, and no matter where you read it, there'll be a different figure. So, but it was definitely a lot of people. Yeah, Shane.
Can I come in there?
Yeah.
What no one has mentioned is the good thing that's come out of wars is it culls populations. It's nature's way.
Stop, would you?
It's not.
No.
Hang on, lads. Let him finish. Come on, let him finish.
Sorry.
Hold on. What was it, Peter said? 80 million people. Imagine those 80 million, there was no war. 80 million multiplied, they'd have families. Listen, no matter what way you look at it, you can say what you like, it shouldn't be a war, absolutely shouldn't be a war. But if there was never wars throughout history, the world population would be far greater.
It wouldn't be that much greater, to be honest with you. What I do believe, what does cull populations is disease. Disease, and that's naturally the way populations are controlled is by disease.
And, sorry, the other thing to mention as well,
which is terrible, by the way, bacteria.
Putting a rifle in your hand,
Yeah,
I think we've all moved beyond wars because I'll tell you,
where are you getting that from? Look around the world.
Yeah. I'll tell you where I'm getting that from. If America decided to take Ireland tomorrow, as they're talking about Greenland, they just come over and fart on us and we're gone.
Bomb.
Putting a rifle in your hand, you have a certain death if you resist. Resistance is futile. You're not fighting like for like anymore. It's a completely
7 of 9
irregular playing field. Meaning, America, as Trump says, Zelensky, you don't have the cards, and he's right. Now that's a very bad thing to say to anyone, but ultimately that's the truth.
Well, I don't think anyone has the cards if you want to look at it from that point.
We don't have a joker. I mean, look, at the end of the day, a pea shooter off the west coast of Ireland, you'd be going to certain death if you put a rifle in your hand, unless you're fighting, say, Greenland, or you're fighting someone of equal stature.
Iceland, yeah.
Iceland or whatever. But if you're, the days of the old wars where we fought each other in the fields and it was gunfire for gunfire, that's gone now. A few missiles, drones in on Ireland, and it's all over.
Yeah, a couple of nukes and we're all gone. Sean, he makes a good point, really, when it comes to Ireland. We have a small population. If there was a war tomorrow and you put a gun in your hand, it is certain death, most likely.
Certain death, absolutely. 100%, unless you're fighting equal.
Yeah, sorry, Oisin.
Oh, sorry, Nalo. Genuinely, we don't have enough guns in this country. No offence.
Oh, I know that.
If you look at America, I mean, look,
half the guns we have are probably jammed. They're probably broke.
I've been around guns most of my life. All I'm saying to you is that, to be quite honest with you, Ireland could be very, very easily taken over. And it's not warmongering. It's very, like, look at the States. It's a nation built on war. Unfortunately.
Well, invasion, yeah. Invasion.
And that's not putting down the American people, but it's a nation built on war. And unfortunately, wars are won and fought by what people sit down eventually and talk about. And eventually, what does it come down to? Nothing. All that suffering and that misery is for what?
Yeah, no, I get you.
Because somebody wants to.
Just very quickly, Sean, you want to say something? Go ahead.
Yeah. Like people keep saying, I keep hearing on those that people saying war comes down to nothing and you get nothing out the end of it. But every war that's been fought, it has been fought for a reason. You know, like Ireland fought for Ireland for a reason because they didn't want to be colonized by the British. Like people,
well, that's
I think
true.
People forget.
Yes.
Yeah, so all the nothing comes out.
Oh, yeah, no, there's always a reason. I'm not saying there isn't a reason.
Because my father's Irish and my mother's Scottish. And then two countries never fought. I don't know what I would be today. I'd probably be Bangladesh, I swear, because the way Britain's got.
So I'm not laughing at you, sorry.
No, I know, but that's the truth. No, them two countries never fought, mate. I won't be here today, and a lot of people here won't be there today. That's on this radio show today, you know? So,
I think...
Yeah, just one final comment, because I have to go to the break. Peter, go on, you want to say something?
Yeah, you know what's more important than that? The more and more people stand up in mass, peaceful... civil disobedience. And you know what?
Well, mass people have protest. I don't know about civil disobedience.
Well, protest and civil disobedience, peaceful
no,
assembly
not.
As well. Which is
no, protest is not civil disobedience.
Well, civil disobedience is standing up against the
no, no, it's
I
not. No,
quite,
no. I mean,
you're right to protest.
No, you know, you have a right to protest a peaceful assembly. And once you inform a Garda Síochána, they'll close off a street and assist you in that, provided it's going to be a reasonable protest. But you don't, civil disobedience
but
is not a right.
You have workers, think about it this way. Workers, what do workers have? What power do they have? Their labour. If they withdraw their labour and say, no, we've had enough. If workers come out one day and say, listen, we've all had enough. Unions aren't going to do it.
I mean, what's your definition of civil disobedience, by the way? My definition of civil disobedience is when a protest becomes nasty and people start hurling things and shouting and roaring at the guards.
Wrecking O'Connell Street.
Yeah, wrecking O'Connell Street.
Civil disobedience is not roaring and shouting at somebody.
By saying civil disobedience is a protest, it suggests that there's something unlawful about a protest. Well, it's not.
No, it's essentially using your power to say no.
Okay, it's not unlawful, but it's not unlawful.
No, it's not.
So it's not. Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, but it's not disobedient.
It could be controlled. Look, think about this, Reynolds.
No.
Back in just briefly, Richie, before you go to your break, 1913, the lockout, when all the great workers of those days were locked out of their jobs because of an Irish capitalist essentially locked them out. William Martin Murphy. What happened? The police came out in the street and they baton charged them and killed them on Bloody Sunday in 1913. So is that civil disobedience when the state used force on ordinary
people? That's more than civil disobedience. It's killing murder, isn't it? My definition of civil disobedience and yours is completely different. Civil disobedience infers that something unlawful is happening. You're being disobedient, you know, to the state, so it's unlawful. But having a protest, a peaceful protest, is not unlawful. It's perfectly legitimate. I mean, in the law. Unless it turns nasty, then it becomes civil disobedience. Disobedience, for example. I'll give you another example of civil disobedience. Everybody turns around tomorrow and says, we're not paying property tax. That's unlawful, so it's civil disobedience. Well, by the way, people might want to do that type of protest, and that's fine too. I'm okay with that. But what I'm saying, obedience.
Well, Well, Niall, that was the water charges. Look at the water charges. People hit the streets.
Yeah, and that was civil disobedience because people refused to pay the water charge. Well, 50% of people refused to pay the water charge when they got the bills.
And who won? The people won.
Oh, yeah, I know. But I'm just saying to you, to define civil disobedience as people just walking up a street protesting is not correct. In the water charges case that you're talking about, people refused to pay the bill, which is unlawful. That was civil disobedience. Yeah. And the people won. The people won. You're right. But it was civil disobedience. Having a protest is not civil disobedience. That's just a protest.
The point I made was peaceful assembly, peaceful protest, and civil disobedience, I said.
Okay, listen, I've run out of time. Sean, Oisin, Peter, listen, thank you very much.
Now, real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.